supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
And the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Well, today's show is about fatherhood, and most of us learn our early lessons about fatherhood comes from our own dads. My dad, he worked for 13 hours a day, 6 days a week. I knew when I was a kid he loved me, and I certainly loved him, but he was rarely there, and I was mad at him a lot. At the time, I didn't understand that he was working at a job he didn't much like so we could afford to send his kids to college and have a better life than he did. I didn't understand that all those hours were how he expressed love for my sister and me. Well, in that generation, that's what fatherhood meant. Since then, more fathers spend more time with their children. My guest today, Bruce Feiler, has even taken the notion of fatherhood a step further. When Bruce developed cancer, he asked six close male friends to fill in his dad's for his little girls in case he didn't survive. Bruce has chronicled his experience in his new book entitled Council of Dads, My Daughters, My Illness, and the Men Who Could Be Me. Today, Bruce is cancer-free. He joins us by phone from New York City. Bruce, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Dan, it's so nice to be with you. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
Yeah, me too. We want to hear from you, our listeners, also. So give us a call if you're a dad or have questions about Bruce. We want you to share your experience about what being a father is like for you, what it means to you, and, of course, what having a father means to you or has meant to you. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. So, Bruce, let's go back to the very beginning, as you are wont to do, as evidenced by your previous book.
Very beginning?
No, 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 not
say that.
That
with me. We go back to in the beginning.
No, no, not that beginning. But the beginning when you and your wife started thinking about having a family, did you have a vision then that you were aware of what it meant to be a dad?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I will go back to that point. As it happens, my wife and I were married 7 years ago next week. So I've been
congratulations
trying to figure out what is the origin of this whole seven-year itch thing. Am I supposed to be itchy? Am I supposed to be taking medication or something? I've been kind of joking about that. And at the time, we both were travelers. We both had come from very close families. I grew up five generations in Savannah, Georgia. She grew up in Boston, but we are both very close. I would almost say hyper-functional our families are. And so I would say the idea of having a family was very important to us, but yet at the same time we both traveled a lot, and so we wondered a lot about what that meant. I, as you know, had spent almost 15 years traveling around the world writing different books, walking the Bible, Abraham. I joined a circus as a clown. My wife runs an organization that supports entrepreneurs around the world. And so for us it was always about, okay, when we come to this point of having a family, we want the family to be at the center of our lives, and sort of how do we balance that? So it was sort of a different set of issues than, say, the ones you articulated with your dad. And so then what happened in our case is my wife got pregnant with identical twin girls, and we thought, I have to say, we thought at that time that it would be sort of all hands on deck, like our friends would rally around, okay, oh, there's twins, you know what, we're going to all we're going to all join together and help. Instead, it was everybody run the other way. And I think that this is something, now that I've thought about it over the years, that I think is a problem that we have in this culture, which is that we have our work and we have our family, and friends get pushed aside. there's something almost that conspires against friendship in this culture. And certainly for parents of young children, our number one complaint was we had no time for our friends. Like, our lives got sacrificed for the lives of our children.
And
so
we hear that with many. Many, we just assume that it's time for the kids now, and it's not time for the friends. They're a lower priority.
I mean, think about it. We have Mother's Day, we have Father's Day, we have Memorial Day, we have Labor Day, we have Secretary's Day. There's nothing about friendship. And I think one of the reasons that I think that I'm so delighted you began our conversation this way is because I think in a lot of ways I was longing for a council of dads even before sort of illness entered the picture. I wanted a way to get my friends involved in my kids' life and then by extension, my life.
Well, where does all that come from? I mean, that's not a typical vision. And did you have a council of dads when you were a kid? I mean, your father, we know he graduated from Wharton here in Philadelphia, and then went to the Navy. Did
well? Everybody, remember, let's just take a moment to talk about that. That my father, my uncle, my brother, my sister, my brother-in-law all went to the University of Pennsylvania. So Philadelphia has been in my blood since I was a kid. And the old joke in my family was I was the black sheep of the family because I went to Yale. I grew up in Savannah, Georgia, at a time when we didn't lock the doors, when friends and neighbors were in and out of our house. And so I do think in a lot of ways that there is this longing in my life and maybe even this longing in a lot of people's lives for this sort of extended friends, family, neighborhood that are always aware, paying attention, just sort of watching kids grow up. Again, in this culture, in a culture of cars and in a culture of locked doors and in a culture of exhaustion and Facebook and Twitter and all of these things, somehow there are just fewer adults around. And so I do think that you're right. I did have, again, a longing, a desire to have this sense of community that I didn't have. And in a lot of ways, I actually think, so that's why I think the Council of Dads is a very old idea. But I also think it's a very new idea because if you actually look at the men in my council, and of course you have, they're all over. So I live in Brooklyn now, but they are in Vermont, they are in Washington, they are in California, one's even in Beijing. But technology here can actually make it easier because of all these ways of being in touch so that you can have this sense of people being around and communicating and being in touch with your kids, even if they aren't just living across the street.
So that thinking was before the girls were born, and I imagine it got solidified after they were born.
Yeah, because as you know, when you have twins, you're just on the defense all the time, and you just are completely reactive, and as a result, completely stretched out. Our girls were born on April 15th, 2005, and our otherwise grim, humorless doctor looked at his watch at 6:14 and then 6:46 and was like, April 15th, tax day, early filer and late filer. It was actually the only funny thing he said all year. And the next morning I was like, doctor, that's a really good line. I've gotten a lot of use out of it. And he's like, you're the writer, kid. So since then, I would say we felt like we wanted to figure out a way to get our kids, our friends, involved in our kids' lives.
All right. So all this sounds well and good, and then you discovered you had cancer. So tell us how you found out that you had cancer, that it was malignant. What was its impact on you?
I had an osteosarcoma, a 7-inch tumor in my left femur that in all likelihood got there because I was hit by a car when I was 5 in Savannah, broke my left femur, was in a body cast at the time, and one of the things that makes me happy about the book now, The Council of Dads, is that it begins with that picture of me in the cast with all that blonde hair that, alas, is gone now. That went from my chin, this body cast, to my left toe, to my right knee, then a steel bar went from my right knee to my left ankle. And for 2 months I was in that cast, and then I basically didn't think about my leg for the next 40 years, and in fact made a living by walking. I was, in fact, mostly known as the author of Walking the Bible, the host of Walking the Bible on PBS, and I was the walking guy, then a routine blood test in the spring of 2008 suggested that there was something wrong with my bones that sent me to an MRI, to an X-ray, to a bone scan, and then I got a call from my doctor, the tumor in your leg is not consistent with a benign tumor. So suddenly I stopped walking, and in fact it took my mind a second to convert that double negative into a much more horrifying negative, which is that I have cancer. So that turned out to be an osteosarcoma. 600 Americans get one a year. 85% are under 21. So 100 adults a year get one of these cancers. Compare that to 200,000 women who get breast cancer, 190,000 men who get prostate cancer.
It must have been terribly painful, cancers in the bone.
At the time, I was probably just getting to the point that I would have ignored the pain, I would say. So in that regard, we didn't exactly catch it early because it had been growing for a while and it was quite big and it had eaten through my bone and the muscle. But I was just getting to the point where, as I said, I would have ignored it. And now suddenly the pain becomes different. That afternoon, I went home and my girls, who had just turned 3 and were very much girly girls at the time, princesses and cupcakes and ballerinas and mermaids and the whole thing, they came and running to meet me, and they did this dance where they kind of twirled in a circle and fell to the ground, and I just crumbled. I kept imagining all the walks I wouldn't take, or the boyfriends I wouldn't get to scowl at, or the aisles I wouldn't walk down. And I don't know, maybe it's because I'm a writer, but for me it was about voice. It's like, what would Daddy think about this, or what would Daddy say about that? And then it was a couple of days later, really instantly, right on top of each other, in the middle of that fearful week, where I awoke with this letter forming in my head. And the idea I had is I would reach out to 6 men from all parts of my life and ask them to be present in the lives of my girls. And Dan, I was lying, it was in Cape Cod, visiting my in-laws. I got out of bed. I didn't want to wake my wife. And I sat in this room, and I said, okay, I'm going to call this group the Council of Dads. And as soon as I said those words, the Council of Dads, I just felt like it left out of my mind and filled the room. Like it was an old idea. You know what they say, like some kids are like old souls or something? This felt like an old idea. It felt like it always been in the world. And then as, you know, and the way you've constructed our conversation here, it felt like it had answered this need that somehow I already had.
So I want to come back. The Council of Dads, focusing on the girls and your legacy. I'm curious about the nature of your mind. Did it help distract you from your potential demise or the pain?
Well, Linda will say, my wife, she will say that one of the things that she loved about the Council of Dads is that it did give me something to think about during the next year when I went through this long, arduous treatment. And as you said, I'm cancer-free now, and I'm doing well, but of course we didn't know that at the time. And I went through 4 months of chemo, a 15-hour surgery to rebuild my leg, and then 4 more months of chemo. And the Council of Dads was a source of affirmation and sort of just, I don't know, simple, constructive, something to do. Because anybody, you know, you've had issues in your life, as I understand it, and lots of people suffer one way or another, and as you know, when you go through a situation like this, control, you completely give up control. You give it to the doctors, right. You give it to the medicine, you give it to some path of treatment, and this gave me something to do that was constructive in a fairly destructive period of my life. So I definitely think it did that.
Well, personally, my experience when, you know, I'm in crisis, minor or major, is I let my mind take me to my worst nightmare, and in your case it was death.
Yes.
And I put together a way of strategizing to deal with my worst nightmare. And once I have a strategy for dealing with the nightmare, then I'm much more relaxed. I'm ready to go into it, or more ready.
So I think that, you know, in this case, what was interesting about for me going through this process was I really felt like I sort of melted away. I mean, I'd written at this point 8 books. I'd been to 60 countries. I sort of said, you know what, I've lived a full life. And I also thought that Linda would find a way to live a life of passion because it's who she is, despite all the pain that she might experience. But I did kept coming back to the girls, and so I sort of created this, I don't know, wrestling death cage match between use my girls as energy to fight my cancer for the sake of my girls. And I just sort of felt like I slipped away or sort of just almost disappeared from the process.
You did that too fast. Tell me about the cage match again.
What it was it was sort of like, okay, you know what? I've lived a full life. No one's not ever going to say I didn't live a full life. But what it was for me was the match was between, I created this sort of tension between the cancer and my girls. So use my girls as energy to fight the cancer. So in other words, I wanted to fight it in order to be here for them. And I then, that's what it became for me. Like, don't worry about myself, do it for them. And I think that that is what gave me the fuel. And so that's why I was fighting the cancer, and then that's why I was creating the Council of Dads, because it did address this fear of, would they wonder who I was? Would they wonder what I thought? And then what happened was I then went out and started inviting people to be in the council and saying to them, what's the one piece of advice you would give to my girls?
Yeah,
and what they said to me, kind of was so moving and mind-blowing, that's what compelled me to write the book, which then gave me something else to do.
I want to get into detail and with that in a minute. We've got to take a break. But before we do, I want to ask you, for how long did you live with death on your shoulder? And do you still, to a certain extent?
I would say every day the last 2 years, I've thought about dying. And I would say it has been the most fulfilling and life-affirming experience that I've ever had. And I believe that the act of thinking about dying does not rest on your shoulders, or certainly doesn't rest on my shoulders as a burden. It doesn't feel like a burden on the shoulders. It feels like an engine at the back. It feels like an engine that says, get out of bed, get out of the house, take a kid, take a walk, make a memory. It compels you to live your life more actively. As my doctor said to me on the one-year anniversary of my diagnosis, the surgeon who did my surgery, he said, and when I said, what would you tell my girls if they came to you and said, what should we learn from Daddy's story? What he said was, I would tell them what I know. Everybody dies, but not everybody lives.
Yeah.
I want you to live.
Yeah, Franklin Abbott, sociologist and author of At the Will of the Body many years ago, he said, death is no enemy of life. He said, we couldn't understand life without death, just like illness is no enemy of health. We couldn't appreciate health without illness. We need those things, and we construct so many institutions and defenses to convince ourselves that the death can be postponed or avoided altogether. And in a way, it's sad. So we're going to take a short break, and we'll come back in just 1 minute, and we'll talk about the Council of Dads, where you got the idea, who you spoke to, what you said to them, and what they said. We're talking with Bruce Feiler today. He's a writer. His latest book, Council of Dads, chronicles his fight with cancer and how he called on his closest friends to father his little girl. If you want to ask Bruce some questions, or you want to talk about your own experience of fatherhood and what community means to you in that context, give us a call. We're at 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY-FM.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. From June 26th through September 12th, PAFA presents Andy Warhol, Polaroids and Black and White Prints, portrait studies of visual diaries by legendary pop artist Andy Warhol, including images of Starlet P. Isadora, singers Paul Anka and Liza Minnelli, and artist Keith Haring. The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts. For details, 215-972-7600 or online at pafa.edu.
As critics, Jim and I like making lists so much that we do them not once, but twice a year.
Yes, Greg, why wait until the end of the year to celebrate the best music? I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. And this week on Sound Opinions, the world's only rock and roll talk show, we name the best albums of 2010 so far. Plus, we look at rock's place on Broadway.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Fatherhood is what we're talking about today, what it means, who we need, how we raise our children, and can we really do it by ourselves? My guest is well-known author Bruce Feiler, who's written Walking the Bible. His current book is called The Council of Dads, where he chronicles his battle with cancer and what it impelled him to do to help raise his child. Our number is 888-477-9499. So, Bruce, how did you pick these guys? Tell us about the mind work that went into that.
So I had this idea to reach out to men and ask them to be in the Council of Dads. And my first instinct was not to tell my wife. We should focus on the positive. We should live in the moment, right? She's a very upbeat person, my wife. But I couldn't control myself because the idea sort of took hold of my imagination. And so the next day I told her, and she promptly started, I mean, she loved the idea, but she started rejecting my nominees. So she would say, well, I love him, but I would never ask him for advice. So it, you know, the first cold shower was, it turned out that starting a Council of Dads was a very efficient way to find out what my wife really thought of my friends. So we decided that we needed a set of rules to kind of guide the process. So we ended up with a few rules. Number one, no family, only friends. We figured that our family would already be there. And as Linda says, your friends know you differently from your family.
Right, right.
So that was rule number one. Rule number two was only men. Again, we were trying to fill the dad space, sort of what is the role of a father in a child's life. Then the next rule was, what was the next rule? The next rule was intimacy over longevity. Maybe some of my newer friends might better capture the dad I wanted to be. It didn't matter how long I knew somebody. And then basically one friend per phase. We didn't want to have, like Linda kept saying, she didn't want to have five guys from college. She wanted the diversity. So we ended up with my oldest friend, my camp counselor, my college roommate, my business partner, confidant, and a kind of tortured romantic poet friend. And I mentioned earlier I wrote this letter to these men, but instead of sending it or, God forbid, emailing it, I somehow made the decision that I wanted to do it in person. So it took a number of months for this whole thing to unfold, and I sort of sat down with each of these friends. I told them what they meant to me, and I asked them to be in the council. Linda jokes that it was sort of like having six different marriage proposals. I sort of friend married each of these guys. And that process, by the way, was one of the most fulfilling parts of the whole experience. I mean, again, something we never do. We never sit and tell our friends what they really mean to us. And it can be very powerful, and it certainly deepened all of these relationships.
What did you tell them?
Well, what I said to them was, okay, I'm asking a group of men to be present for my girls. I don't want to be too much of a burden, right? I'm not asking you to be their guardians. I'm just asking you to go to a ballet recital, introduce them to somebody, just kind of be present in their lives. And then I would say maybe the key moment in the whole process is I said, I want you to play a particular role. So I want you to be travel dad, or you to be values dad, or you to be nature dad. And I sort of assign each of them a task. So you teach them how to live, how to travel, how to think, how to dream. And I said, I want you to think about what way you can encapsulate that wisdom. Like, what is the one lesson you would pass on to them? I mean, just to kind of take this out of the abstract. So the first one we did, I went to Vermont and to see my friend Jeff. Jeff runs a student travel program. And he led a trip I took to Europe, the first trip I took abroad when I graduated from high school.
He's the guy you described as kind of a life coach or a big
brother.
Yeah,
exactly. He was sort of my big brother, camp counselor, life coach type of figure. And so we went, and I said, okay, I want you teach my girls how to travel, because you know what it's like to come from a place where you know your neighbors and yet be open to the world. And he said, well, this is what I would tell your girls. I would say, be a traveler, not a tourist. Seek out what's different. Plunge yourself into experience. Take risks. So I said, okay, it's 10 years from now, and one of my girls is, my girls are about to take their first trip abroad, and they come to you. What advice would you give them? And he said, I would tell your girls that they should approach this trip as a young child would approach a mud puddle. You can bend over and look at your reflection in the mirror and maybe kind of run your finger through and see a ripple. Or you can jump in and thrash around and see what it feels like or smells like. And he said, I want to tell you girls, I want to see you back here at the end of this experience covered in mud.
So did you tell Jeff there was a real possibility that you were going to die?
Well, I think everybody knew that at this point. I mean, these are my close friends, so everybody knew what the situation. But what has been interesting is that, I mean, somebody asked me recently if I've dismissed the Council of Dads now that I'm cancer-free, and the answer is no. If anything, their role in our lives has gotten stronger. And so actually sort of what I feel like, it certainly has nothing to do with illness. I mean, as I'm seeing this book spread all around the world, lots of people who are healthy are doing this. Even my girls now have gone to Linda, now jumping 2 years later, and saying, okay, Daddy has a Council of Dads. We want you to have a Council of Moms.
Well, I have to tell you, in my training many years ago, as when I was studying family therapy, we talked about the concept of second chance families. And you know, what you're describing is a healthy version of that. It's people who don't get good mothering. You know, they tend to find people in the neighborhood or other people in the family or a friend's mom, and the same thing with dad. And if they can find a second chance mother or father, even a second chance family, these people do very well in life versus the ones.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure it's based on exclusively on the idea of if the first parent is somehow inadequate. I mean, I'm seeing. Look, I couldn't have a more particular story, and yet somehow this book is tapping a universal chord. I'm seeing single parents, particularly single women who might be estranged from the father,
right,
who are having councils of dads to fill that role. I'm seeing parents of teenagers who those kids need to separate. Again, a perfectly healthy developmental transaction.
Well, apropos of that, let's go to the phones, because we've got a lot of callers who want to join the conversation. I think we've got Ron on the line who might be addressing your last point. Hey, Ron.
Hello. Good afternoon, Dan. Hi. And Bruce, thank you for being on the show.
Sure.
It's wonderful, wonderful to be here. Thank you.
I'm calling. I was actually invited to call. I founded in the greater Philadelphia region a charity called Daddy's Spirit Moves Me Forward, which is a group that helps children whose fathers have died with group recreational and educational experiences. And I first wanted to applaud you, Bruce, for the Council of Dads concept and for seeing that it really has some validity and purpose, even maybe beyond the welcome news that you're cancer-free.
Well, I appreciate that, and it sounds like you're doing great work, and I'm delighted to hear about what you're doing. And yes, I think that it has given us all an excuse to think about parenting, to think about the dad's voice, if you will, in a child's life. And I definitely think as you know, as we get older, the point I just was making about, you know, teenagers in particular. I was talking to a mom recently who had heard about my book, and she has. She has, in her case, 12-year-olds who are starting to separate, and she put a list of close friends on the fridge and said, you can call these friends if you need to, no questions asked. And so I think it is, you know, there's something about, you know, one of the things I think as parents, and particularly as dads, there's this idea that dad's supposed to be the answer man, right? He's supposed to be able to solve all of the problems. But of course, dads, especially since many of us, you know, we tend to be more communicative and active and involved than our parents were, may not be enough for all the moms out there, but we're moving in the right direction, but yet we don't feel like we have all the answers. One of the things that I love about having this Council of Dads is if I need advice on, you know, what's the best way to take a hike or what's the best way to take a trip or what's the best way to ask a question or face some decision, I feel like I've got this whole team. And I think men respond to this whole idea of teamwork, and that's something that's just very helpful.
That's interesting. Ron, I want to come back to you. Could you tell us what the issues you're seeing with these kids who don't have their dads, who didn't have their dads? What are the issues? And do you have a sense of what kind of impact the organization's having on these kids?
Great question.
Yes, well, every child is unique as an individual. Briefly, I started the organization when I turned 40. I lost my dad when I was 15. And when I turned 40, it meant that I outlived both my dad and the grandfather I never met, who both died at age 39. So for me, it was a year of introspection, but also learning what today, a generation later, the needs of today's grieving children are and what the resources available are. And there are a lot more resources today than there were a generation ago. And that is very encouraging. In terms of what Daddy Spirit does, is we utilize recreational outings, basically field trips, to bring kids together. And the peer interaction is what really sets us apart and what benefits the kids the most. So the answer on the question is that a lot of the kids, not necessarily every single one, but a common issue is a feeling that you're alone, a feeling of isolation, a feeling that maybe you're, even though intuitively you might know you're not the only child in the world going through something like this, that it sure feels that way. And groups like this help a lot.
Ryan.
The concept of a Council of Dads also is a different spin on how a community can help children go on with life and feel like there are still doors open to them and they can still embrace life despite the tragedy of a father dying.
Ron, this show is not about plugging organizations, but let's plug your organization. How can people get in touch with you if they want to get involved?
Well, we do have a website, www.daddiespirit.org, and it has consecutive S's but no punctuation. So that would be a good way to read a little bit about what we're about.
That's
and also
great.
Be in touch.
Sounds like a wonderful organization.
That's tremendous.
Yeah.
Congratulations, and congratulations on taking a painful thing in your life and turning it into a positive thing for lots of other people.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks That's for the great. Work you do. I want to, by the way, we're talking with Bruce Feiler about fatherhood, about what it means to be a dad, and what it means to be living in community, how communities can really help raise our children. You know, we hear the phrase, it takes a village, but, you know, Bruce Feiler's book, Council of Dads, really turns it into something operational and important. Bruce, our number is 888-477-9499. You didn't want your doctor to be part of your council. How come?
Well, he's just somebody that I mean, I love my doctor, and he's a man of great wisdom, and as you know, there's a chapter about him in the Council of Dads.
Right.
But I really, I was just trying to do a couple things. Number one, take my closest friends and give them a task to play, and then to take certain parts of me and find somebody to fulfill it. So that was really, in fact, most of the council was already, I kind of already decided who I'd wanted even before I developed the wonderful relationship I did with my doctor. But I also would say I don't really think this is about illness, and I know we're here on Father's Day week, and certainly there's lots of attention that is being focused on this book right now because of Father's Day, but actually in an odd way, I don't think at its core it is about fathers, actually. I think at its core it's about friendship, and it's about male friendship in particular, and it's about sort of a changing role of being male in America, and obviously a lot of that has to do with being a father, but I think a lot of women just come up to me and they're just sort of fascinated by, you know, they see this book as a way of knowing what their husbands are talking about with their guy friends behind the locker room door or when we go fishing.
Well,
men's feelings are just completely opaque to women out there, which is why women are so fascinated in this topic.
With all due respect, the book is also about something else, because it's about all the things you said, and it's with a backdrop of life and death. So, so one of the byproducts was that you did something that few people do, regardless of gender, is that you looked at the people closest to you and told them what they meant to you. And we usually say these kinds of things at funerals.
It's amazing. You know, it is absolutely, it's just so comforting. I mean, that's why when I think of the Council of Dads, the feeling I get is a feeling of security. It's a feeling of love. It's a feeling of life, because people just crave that. And when you do it, it completely transforms the relationship, because it's sort of the thing that dares not speak its name. And that's kind of friendship these days, and particularly male friendship. And it's just, it has been such an affirming thing to have gone through that. It's kind of one of the big pieces of advice I say to people now, right? You know what? Sit down with your friend. Tell them what they mean to you. It'll change everything. And what's great about it for the kids in particular, because they now feel with the Council of Dads, my now five-year-old twin daughters, that these are not just daddy's friends. They're their friends, too. And the thing about that is your parents have to be there. Even relatives have to be there. Even teachers, in some ways, sort of have to be there. It's their job. This is one of the few relationships of choice, I think, that my kids experience. Like, these men are choosing to be their friends. And I think of it kind of as a like a friend model. If a parent is a love model, and then, you know, sort of mentors might be role models, this is sort of a friend model. These men are modeling friendship for my children and saying, I choose to have this relationship with you. I think you're worth it. That's very powerful for the kids.
All right, we've got to take a short break. I want to forewarn you about something here and give you a minute to think about it. I want to get into your head a little bit, and I won't charge you for this, but I might, depending on where we go. But I want to look into a connection between your writing, Walking the Bible, and Abraham, and going way back into ancient times, and the Council of Dads. And the connection between those two lives somewhere in your prefrontal cortex. And I'd like to snoop around in there if we can. 60 seconds to think about it, and we'll talk about it when we get back. So there's something we can all look forward to. My guest is Bruce Feiler.
A tour of my prefrontal cortex, courtesy of Dan.
My guest is Bruce Feiler, and he's written Council of Dads. It's a group of his maybe dearest friends he put together in the wake of his diagnosis with cancer, and these are men he put together to help raise his children, and they have remained intact after his cure from cancer. So if you want to join our conversation, it's about friendship, it's about fatherhood, it's about community. It's 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. I'm Dan Gottlieb, and this is Voices in the Family, right here on WHYY-FM.
On the next Fresh Air, 1960s singer and songwriter Jackie DeShannon.
Think of your fellow man, lend him a helping hand, put a little love in your heart.
Her life in the music business included touring with the Beatles and hanging out with Elvis and Jimmy Page. She's being inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. Join us
this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Neda Agha Sultan wanted what so many Iranians want for their country, the right to stand up and speak out. And then she was killed during last year's protests. Her death, captured on a cell phone camera, became a symbol of what Iranians like her hope and fear. But who was she really?
I hope what the film has done is introduce the real Iranian people to the American public.
We'll tell you about the new film for Neda next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about fatherhood, friendship, community, and what all that means and how we need to reach out to raise our children. I'm talking with Bruce Feiler, who's written Council of Dads. And as promised, we are going to open this segment exploring his prefrontal cortex. So, are you there, Bruce, or did you hang up and leave the show?
I went to get a scalpel, the mirror, the whole thing. You know, I'm interested in seeing what you find. You know, I'm interested in seeing it through your eyes.
Well, you're making me do the work.
I spend a lot of time in my prefrontal cortex, and you don't.
So I do wonder about the connection. You know, there's something about you that are interested, that is interested in the way things were, the beginning of things. And here you are reaching back to a longing for community that really has been gone now for 30 years, 40 years. I just wonder if there's a connection in your worldview, the way you see life in the world.
I grew up in Savannah, Georgia, five generations of Jews in the American South. And I love the South. I love the stickiness and the familyness and the storytellingness. But I grew up Jewish in the South, which means that I was a part of something, but yet at the same time, I was apart from it.
Mm-hmm.
I then was Jewish, which means, and I love the stickiness of being Jewish. I love the storytellingness. I love the familyness and the togetherness. But I grew up Jewish in the South of the United States in the 1960s and 70s, which meant I was apart not only from European Judaism, but even from mainstream American Judaism. So I feel a part of it and a part from it. And I believe that what has kind of connected most of these disparate topics I've written about in my life, small-town Japan, Oxford and Cambridge, the American circus, walking the Bible, Abraham, my book last year, America's Prophet, on the role of Moses in American history, is that I go off and I enter worlds and I become a part of them, and I leave and I describe them to people who might want to know what they're like.
So you're trying to heal your childhood.
That's your words, and I think that there's a lot to that. In the case of the Council of Dads, I would say it normally takes me 3 years to write a book. It took me 3 months to write the Council of Dads. It fell off my fingertip. As a writer, what happens, there's these two birds that sit on your shoulder. One bird sits on one shoulder, and it says, oh, my gosh, you are really good. That sentence is so insightful, and people are going to love this story. There's another bird that sits on the other shoulder and says, you are really awful. You are wasting your time. Nobody's going to want to read this. You should really go to law school. And I think that what happened when I was writing The Council of Dads, for whatever set of reasons, is kind of the negative bird never sat on the other shoulder. Mm. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I was trying to capture this wisdom for my girls and for anybody who might like to come along. It was really a sort of guidebook.
It really is
of
interesting. You've also got some interesting birds. I don't have the law school bird. He just sits here and craps on my shoulder. But I get no advice.
But the one I wanted to say was a friend of mine, and so I did this in this period. I was incredibly focused, and I wasn't thinking about it. Okay, I don't know if that's prefrontal this or some other part of my brain. When I then gave it to particularly one friend of mine, Josh Ramo, in my council, he's the kind of beauty dad in my council, as you know, he said to me, most of your books are journeys to places that we want to go but can't. This book is a journey of a place that we don't want to go, but we feel enriched when we do. And that's really the first time I kind of analyzed it. Before, it was done completely without the sort of layer of analysis that I might otherwise put on something.
Yeah, it's and also one's a journey outside. This one is a journey inside, and clearly you're writing from your heart, and that's really when the other bird does go away. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Pat on the line. Pat, hi. Yep. You're on Voices.
Hello.
Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
First, I want to applaud Bruce for having had the foresight to think about what his girls would need when he's gone. And I speak from personal experience, and I want to share this with you and get an opinion. My mother died when I was very young, and I have a younger brother and sister. We were all under 10 years of age. And it changed forever my father in trying to raise his children. And he was never the father that we knew because he tried to fulfill both mother and father role, and it was very difficult for him. About 10 years later, my father died, so we were all orphaned by the time we were 20. And I've spoken with other adults who lost a parent when they were a child, and it's amazing what we have tried to do to get the parenting we didn't get, and mostly it's the role models. So I'd like to ask Bruce if he has considered what it might be like for his wife to have to raise those girls and what role she would need to play, and the fact also that how open she is to making sure that there are men in your daughter's lives and fathers in her life, because if you were gone, what would she do?
Well, first of all, thank you for sharing your story. It puts a lump in my throat, and it sounds like you've done a lot of work or had a lot of experience and are in a good place about it. I think that this is not—it's not very politically correct to say this, but I actually believe, and I've come to believe very deeply, that the roles are different. That the mom voice and the dad voices are different. I mean, if anything, what's trendy right now
Absolutely.
Is saying that dads aren't really necessary. In fact, there was a study last week about lesbian moms being better, producing better children than single moms or two-parent moms. I think that the reality is that the dad voice and the mom voices are different, and I feel like my wife could be a counsel unto herself, and that she can be this great mom, but I don't think that she can be the dad voice, nor should I think that she tried to be the dad voice. And I think that I would love if God forbid I'm not around, and right now there's every reason to believe that I am going to be around, but I would like my wife to find happiness with another man or whatever that might be. But I really feel like even then, even more, the counsel would be necessary, because the girls would still want to hear their dad's voice, even though there might be other men's voices around. So I think that there is this sort of lingering, idea or whatever from the women's movement that somehow we don't need both voices. We need both voices. And I think that there definitely, I've read a little bit about this, enough to know that there are certain parents, upon losing a spouse, who try to play both roles, and I think that the child still has a need for both, and maybe the idea of a council. I mean, one of the most moving things I've experienced traveling around the country talking about the Council of Dads in recent weeks are people who come with arms full of books up to have me sign them and say, I lost a parent when I was younger or even recently, and I'm going to use your book to reach out to friends of my now deceased parent to see if I can retroactively create this council concept.
Pat, what are your thoughts about what you're hearing? What's your reaction?
Oh, I'm so encouraged, because I'm in my 50s, so what is open and people are willing to talk about today, they didn't back then. And it's scared. I think a lot of other adults get scared when a situation, when they see a parent who dies, and they want to help, but they don't know what to do. And I can also tell you, for instance, my closest friend, a male friend, lost his dad when he was in fourth grade, and I lost my mother when I was in fourth grade, so that's our bond. And it's really clear that there's it's more than just missing the parent. Nobody will ever replace them in our heart.
Correct.
But we are missing a good role model, and while there are other people that can fill that role, if the remaining parent does not encourage it or provide opportunities, we struggle with trying to get that parenting. And it's little things like, it's not so much what is said to us by our parents, but we miss the interaction between how our mother and father interact. What is it like when there's a good marriage or a bad marriage? I mean, children learn by observation a lot, not just what they're told or specifically taught. And so we miss those subtle cues about all of that. And it's a real struggle for us as adults to
that. Let me ask you just to briefly tell us, so how have you done? Can you say that in just a few seconds? How have you done as an adult? What's it been like for you?
To keep it brief, it's been a journey. And there isn't time when I will miss either or both of our parents. So that piece is always... Dr. Gottlieb, I guess the best way I can explain it, this is not something we get over, but we deal with it, or we manage it, and we try to fill those things ourselves. It also makes us a little more independent. There is some good that comes out of it, but there is a lot of loss. It would be the same as, I don't know if I'm answering your question.
You are, and it's, you're talking about good news and bad news, and you're quite eloquent, and I thank you for your call.
You're welcome.
And I hope you enjoy the book.
Oh, I can't wait. I just heard about it now. This is the first time this morning, so I can't wait to go get the book.
You will love it.
Thank you so much.
Bruce, we've only got a couple of minutes left, but as we spoke, you talked about this Council of Dads kind of being consistent with your overall worldview. When you look back after having cancer, and you said living with death, has your worldview changed at all?
Well, there's a lot of ways, Dan, in which it hasn't, and which I feel like it's just made me more interested in community, more interested in the past, more interested in time, more interested in making memories with my children. But I would say that there are ways, and maybe the number one way is I was on crutches for a year and a half, and as a result, I had to walk slower. And I came to realize that you hurry in your life, you get where you're going, but you get there alone, usually. And if you go slow, you get where you're going, but you get there with a community that you build along the way. And I learned that in Paris 200 years ago, a new kind of pedestrian appeared. He was called a flaneur, and he would wander the arcades. And as you know, this is in my book, and it became sort of a motto for me, because these flaneurs would take a turtle for a walk and let the reptile set the pace. Mm. And to me, that's become my piece of advice for my children. Take a walk with the turtle. Behold the world in pause.
Well,
single number one advice I got from everybody, slow down. Don't be in a hurry.
I have to tell you two things. Your children don't need that advice. They can give that advice if we let our children be teacher. And the second thing I want to tell you is thank you so much for joining us today. I really enjoyed it. It's been delightful. And if you're ever in Philly, let's meet for a cup of coffee.
I look forward to that, Dan. Thank you so much for all you do for so many people. I look forward to this, and it really fulfilled my expectations.
Yeah, take care, Bruce. My guest has been Bruce Feiler. His latest book is The Council of Dads, My Daughters, My Illness, and The Men Who Could Be Me. Next week on Voices in the Family, our show's going to be about how the Internet is changing the way people seek medical treatment and its impact on the doctor-patient relationship. Well, you can reach us at voices@whyy.org, and you can reach me at drdangottlieb.com. Check out my new webpage there, by the way. The engineer for today's show has been Fred Snyder. Elizabeth Perez Luna is our executive producer of audio content here at WHYY. Mike and Scott's our executive producer. Stephanie Marutis is our producer. Evan Pliss is our intern. And I am Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friends.
Tell me more.